On the show today, we have ACI's very own Lou Zarafsky talking about data stewardship as the number one trend in connectivity and the continued ripple effects of big data for fintechs. Check it out. Hey, the topic at hand here is data stewardship as the number one trend in connectivity and then the continued ripple effects of big data for fintech. So first of all, let's talk about data stewardship here. Before we dive in here, let's lay the foundation. What exactly is data stewardship these days? Obviously, taking care of your data, prioritizing, all that good stuff.
Yep, so stewardship is, as you say, it refers to looking after things, looking after assets. And we all kind of refer to banks or credit institutions looking after people's money. We all know that's the primary function of a financial institution, right? But there might be a bigger thing growing here, which is the stewardship and the looking after of a potentially equally important asset, which is the management of data. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's becoming quite a big sort of buzz phrase at the moment is that as we move, or as the world moves in towards this era of the fourth industrial revolution, a lot of the advances that we're going to see in terms of personal productivity, in terms of industries being more productive, is going to obviously be driven by data and data exchange. Mm-hmm. And somebody has to go and look at this issue about who owns data, who looks after data, and how you manage the gateway of that data exchange between different participants.
Right. And I've heard there's good data and there's bad data that you want to throw out, and there's just prioritizing of all this data that we have now. Because, before it was like, okay, hey, we have this data, we recognize we have the data. Now what do we do with it? We prioritize it, we clean it up, we get rid of the bad data that we don't need, and it's just this whole new world for us right now.
Well, the world of data processing is obviously full of all sorts of acronyms and cliches at the moment. Yeah. My favorite new word for last year is this thing about data is the new oil, right? It's like the idea that there's loads of data there to be had and you can do whatever you like with it. And I've got news for people who think that's true. Permissioned data is the new oil. If you've got permission refined data, mm-hmm. It's clean, you can do whatever you like with it. If you've just found a whole hoard of data and you haven't got necessarily the rights to do anything with that data, you've got to consider that as potentially toxic.
Oh, yeah.
So first of all, kind of like, is the data clean or not in that respect? But the other thing is there's just so much data being exchanged at the moment that I can't remember, there's an article by The Guardian a couple of years ago saying that only 0.5% of all data processed ever has been cleaned or analyzed in any way. And we're generating more and more of this stuff. We're generating tons of this stuff. And I love this IBM figure about there's more data now in existence than ever before. Mm-hmm. But 90% of all the data around was created in the last 2 years. So if you extrapolate that, you're going to do an awful lot of data, awful lot of processing, and an awful lot of cleaning up to do around that data.
And it's just going to get more and more as time goes on as well. So let's talk about data stewardship as the number one trend in connectivity. Why is this happening? Why is it the number one trend?
It might not be the total number one trend. It's slightly arguable. But if we look at the role of the fourth industrial revolution. This is the premise that as we move to a world where lots of machines and systems and platforms, digital platforms, are acting on our behalf, either as citizens or as businesses, and those systems need to talk to each other, and we have to go and share our preferences and our data with those systems, and then they go and share those preferences with each other. There's an awful lot of things that need to go and talk to each other and connect with each other. And the mechanisms and the permissions and the consents that are given in that very, very complicated ecosystem that's going to underpin the fourth industrial revolution, mm-hmm. is something which is really clearly occupying the minds of policymakers, of politicians, even of regulators. So at the moment, it might not be the most important thing for the man in the street. Most people in the street probably don't care about their permissions
Exactly right.
But actually, it's coming soon because as we move towards that world, it will not be sustainable to not have some kind of well-organized system for how we manage and steward that exchange of data.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And so why is this important today, especially for financial institutions? Is it... like you said before, keeping that data clean, prioritizing it, keeping it secure, all that good stuff. Is that the significance here or what else is there?
Well, there's also a lucky confluence of events for financial institutions. If you look, if you kind of zoom out and look at the big picture of global kind of policy and regulation around banking and big data, it's fairly recent that we had the big a scandal, which most people will now be aware of, the Facebook and Cambridge Analytica scandal, where people's data was being farmed without them realizing that not only was their data being used potentially for slightly unpleasant purposes, but also their contact lists were also being exchanged with the people who were using that data. Now, clearly that's causing problems for Facebook. It's still ongoing sort of inquiry, both in the US and in Europe, about how that's going to play out. And therefore, people got kind of a little bit spooked by how this data, which they previously thought, it's just spare data, it's data exhaust. We don't really need this data anyway. In fact, we're more than happy to give this data away in exchange for this beautiful social media and search stuff that we get. But that might, that's changing a little bit now. People are getting a little bit more spooked and thinking, I'm not sure about that. Maybe I might want to go and just be a bit more careful about how I'm sharing that data. Now, at the same time, we've got this situation where banks have been forced to open up, specifically where I am. I'm in London, Europe. Mm-hmm. Well, I think London's in Europe today, but we're in the middle of the whole Brexit thing.
Oh, yeah, I hear all about that.
we still have this regime where data held by banks must be shared with third parties, providing that I, as a citizen, I, as a consumer, have granted consent to a third party to go and get that data and expose it to somewhere else. Now, it's interesting at the moment that data exchange is kind of asymmetric. What that means is that banks are forced to really, really open up their data to third parties.
Mm-hmm.
But if a bank wants to go to a big data company, a big social media company, it's not really that same obligation to share. So there might be a good opportunity at the moment. If you look at these two events taking place at the same time, but we might not sort of love our banks in the same way we might love our big data companies, but we kind of trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And as we get more alert to the idea that this data, just this personal data of yours, is actually quite valuable, you might want somebody you trust with that asset to be a good steward of that data.
Yeah.
And if that steward of that data can actually then do something with the data and maybe package it up and protect it and maybe sell it on and get you some reward for it, there's a fantastic opportunity for banks to seek a new revenue model here of doing something with the data, not just so that they can go and monetize data and improve the bottom line,
mm-hmm.
but because they can generally create some customer-centric propositions on behalf of consumers and businesses as a result of using that data wisely.
I love that. Love that idea for sure. Let's switch gears to ripple effects of big data for fintechs. What are these ripple effects that are happening out there?
Well, so fintech, okay. At the moment, fintechs are already being quite cool. I mean, in terms of providing consumer-based propositions, which are looking at the behavioral economics and of the way in which people use their financial services.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
encouraging people maybe to save more or through the idea of digital coin jars and savings mechanisms like that. Now, a lot of that is being driven by microdata, data that somebody volunteers on a small scale. But I'm looking at some work here in Europe where regulators, or I should say policymakers, are saying, well, if you want to go and extend this and get this really sophisticated view of how that might play out and be more broadly acceptable, these fintech companies haven't got access to anywhere near enough data. They need access to more.
Yeah.
So policymakers are trying to say, is there a way in which some of that data that's been hoarded and created elsewhere, maybe that could be opened up and we can make sure that we can encourage the fintech sector to do an even better job of trying to create better outcomes for our citizens and our businesses and our economies. So that ripple effect is starting to feel its way in terms of fintechs getting more grants, more incentivization and more encouragement from policymakers to carry on with that stuff. And you can see that this might be a leading wave to actually maybe them getting access to bigger data sets, which are either provided by governments through the concept of open data mechanisms or through regulation of people who are currently sitting on big data.
What's the impact of this these effects on consumers out there? Is there, or are they too far down the line? Does it stop at the financial institution, or are consumers affected by this?
Well, as I said earlier, it's difficult at the moment to find one of your friends. I challenge you. You go and talk to some of your friends and say, are they willing to move away from the mechanisms they have now for either internet search, for social media, for which by and large it's free?
Mm-hmm.
Are they willing to move to a mechanism where they might go and rein in some of those things they get for free,
mm-hmm.
pay for something, but then monetize their data? Now,
yeah.
I think most people would say this is just it's fanciful. The toothpaste is out of the tube already. Data's already out there. We've already given up our rights.
Yeah, yeah.
People have already got it. So I think there is a Man on the street, I think there's a challenge here for this at the moment. But I think there's so many things happening in that big policy area that we'll find that people in the street will increasingly be encouraged to say, let's think about this again. There's a great book, actually, by a guy called Jaron Lanier, who wrote this thing, 10 Arguments for Why You Should Delete Your Social Media Right Now. Three years ago, this would have been a fanciful kind of, weird kind of liberal kind of idea. But whereas actually it's now taken as serious currency, because people say, well, these companies have made themselves wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they charge you anything, that's obvious, you get it for free, right? But they're making millions and billions in terms of revenue from advertising.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't mind a bit of that myself, actually.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think that's it's going to come, but I can't say this is happening next year. It's not really 20.
No, I think it's going to be a gradual thing, because I know quite a few people that have deleted their Facebook accounts because of this very fact of that they don't trust what Facebook is doing with their stuff. And my fear is that the financial institutions that could segue into the financial institutions, depending on how they deal with their data as well. I mean, and keeping it safe too in today's cybersecurity world. So this is very, very interesting times indeed. So.
Well, like I said, most people they might not be excited, or they might not love the banks, but they by and large trust banks with that data.
Yeah.
And even if you think about, there's a lot of transaction data that goes flowing through retail consumer transactions. That data, banks are heavily regulated to make sure that data doesn't get lost. If they get a breach, that's a big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
This isn't like something where it's just your exhaust data. This is really, really important if banks lose that data. So they are already, by and large, doing a great job of managing and being stewards of that data. And in addition to that, they do a great job, largely, in terms of making sure that data is used in a totally legal way to make sure they're reducing crime for the benefit of the consumers, to make sure that they're not being done by fraud unnecessarily. But when it comes to actually exchanging the data or selling on the data, that's probably the next opportunity for banks to say, look, we might be thinking about doing that on your behalf, but you know what? We're going to reward you for that.
Yeah.
And we're going to be very, very transparent and clear about the way in which we're going to allow that data to be used.
Would that be kind of an opt-in type thing for the consumer customer or the credit union member? Say, hey, there's this option. Do we have your permission? Like you said before, the permission-based data, so.
Totally. Okay. And the other experience you probably had, maybe not. Where I live in Europe, we have this thing called GDPR, the General mm-hmm. Data Protection Regulation.
Yeah.
So anytime you go to a new website, there's this sort of massive, it's actually a very simple screen that says, hey, do you consent to doing sharing your data? I would say, well, let's just see what they're going to do with that data. And you end up then with about 5 pages of about 120 potential partners they might share the data with. You get,
yes. Whatever, yeah.
I think if you're a bank and you're going to be doing that, I think the regulator come back and say, hang on a minute, that is not fair on your consumers. You need to be far more precise and clear. Even though those 80 things might have been reasonably accurate, mm-hmm. but not in any way helping a consumer to make a judgment. So I think if banks go down that path, they're going to have to be very careful to make sure they don't get on the wrong side of regulators.
Yeah.
And not just the banking regulators, but the data protection regulators too.
Mm-hmm. A bit more scrutiny there, for sure.
Yes.
For sure. All right, let's wrap it up here, Lou. What can we take away from all of this? What can we do between now and the holidays, or going into 2020, where 2020 is going to be another amazing year, I think, for financial institutions and technology as well. So what do we do with all this right now? Where do we take it? What's the final wisdom message here from you?
Final wisdom message, 2020. Yeah, I think if we can move and if we can collectively think about, we all know about B2C, we all know about B2B as mm-hmm. business models. It would be really cool if you can start thinking about the me to be model. Me, mm-hmm. as in, I've got data, I've got valid stuff. I would be really, really impressed if a bank or a credit institution came to me and said, I'm going to help you to go and monetize you in the external world. I'm going to be your steward. So if we can actually encourage and have this discussion about what me to be looks like, that would be a great win for 2020.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, great message to end on. Lou, I could talk about this for another 30 minutes for sure, but I know you got lots of stuff to do, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. So appreciate the time, sir.
You're welcome.
And keep up good. Let's do this again maybe another 6 months and see where we are, so, especially
no problem.
In 2020.
We'll find something equally esoteric, I'm sure.
Exactly. All right, Lou, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
You're welcome. Cheers, bye.